You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Even though we are only 2 minutes into this podcast, there is no way that this team preview will be as long as the prospect minute, quote unquote.
Yeah, and I can be pretty verbose. There's no doubts about that.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
You're trying to lead me right into my next point, which I appreciate. But I just want to say that, generally speaking, a home start against the Royals last year should not warrant 7 earned runs allowed.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friends with Fantasy Benefits team preview podcast. We are going to preview the San Diego Padres. When I saw the list of teams, I thought that San Diego would be a good team to preview because that would get me studying some players that I might not know a lot about, and I can share some information with the listeners about players they might not know a lot about. Fortunately for me, a California boy himself, Justin Mason, has decided to join me in talking everything Padres. How are you today, Justin?
I'm doing well. I'd like to start off by saying I am by no means a California boy. I've just lived here for coming up on 20 years. But I definitely don't consider myself quite yet a Californian.
And your Twitter handle, my friend?
At Justin Mason FWFB.
How could it be any other, correct? I also want to note that we had a discussion in the chat room about the Padres a couple weeks ago, one in which I was being especially harsh towards their general manager, J.J. Preller. I struggle sometimes to understand a couple different things about the Padres. Number one, it was a very interesting rebuild process that they had, because it sure seemed like when they acquired James Shields and when they acquired Matt Kemp, and they acquired a bunch of assets that they were trying to win. And now J.J. Preller is widely being hailed because the farm system, from having to sell those pieces off, certainly looks like it's going to have multiple hits, which is something that we're definitely going to get to later.
No joke, Matt and I did the prospect podcast already for the Padres, and I believe, even though we are only 2 minutes into this podcast, there is no way that this team preview will be as long as the prospect minute, quote unquote.
Yeah, and I can be pretty verbose. There's no doubts about that. But I do find it to be very interesting. I mean, I give them credit for holding on to their general manager and proving some stability when, you know, a master plan, certainly what looked like a master plan to win now, failed, and now it looks like it may rebound in their favor.
I'll tell you that I like Preller a lot because he builds an organization like I do a dynasty team. It's like, go all in, and when it doesn't work, just explode.
Yeah, and I mean, all reports are that things are going to go quite well, but a little teaser for later is that we will discuss exactly how soon we can expect some help from the farm here in a little while. One of the things that jumped out to me when I first looked into the Padres is Roster Resource has Jose Perella, 28 years old, former Yankee prospect Jose Perella, as their cleanup hitter going into this year, which is not as daunting as almost any other middle-of-the-lineup hitter would be in all of Major League Baseball. But he did have a surprisingly good year. One would call, could even call it a bust-out year. And I posed a question to Justin as to if Jose Perella is a post-hype sleeper at this point. And if he, you know, have you ever been on Jose Perella before? And how do you feel about him this year?
I mean, no, yeah, I've never been on Perella before. I'm still not now. You know, you look at the projection systems for him. He, and even last year, I mean, don't get me wrong, in half a season last year, 10 home runs, 4 stolen bases, 288, 347, 490 line. I would guess you get about that and a half, you know, so you're looking at like 15 home runs and maybe 5 to 10 stolen bases, which isn't super exciting. The one thing that was really nice about a guy like Perella before was he had multiple positional eligibility. And he won't have that coming into next year, even if you play on places like Yahoo. He's only going to have outfield eligibility. They're not going to move him around the diamond because they've got other pieces on that team that they want to give a chance to play. They've got pieces that, you know, a couple pieces that will be coming up. So he's not going to be playing the infield at all. He's just going to be an outfielder. And I think there's a real shot that he loses that outfield position if, for some reason, the Padres do sign Eric Hosmer, which has been one of the things that has been rumored for quite a while, because they'll have to move a guy like Will Myers into the outfield, and that takes away his spot. So there's no format big enough and deep enough where I'm going to be rostering Jose Perella next year.
Well, being the self-anointed cynical bastard of Friends with Fantasy Benefits, I just want to mention that how many teams right now could take their cleanup hitter and have him completely not play, you know, within a couple weeks of the start of the season. I guess this gets to my point that I'm going to be a little bit critical of Preller, in so much as how barren I find the major league roster to be for the most part. Now, I will say this, if I was going to be an eternal optimist, I mean, his K percentage went down a percentage and a half from 2016 last year, and his walk percentage went up almost 5.5%, which seems to be a pretty significant boost. Now, you know, his 23 home runs that he had between AAA and the bigs last year just completely dwarfs his best prior year, but the batted ball profile doesn't really seem to indicate that there was an essential change. He pulled the ball a little bit more, but he hit less fly balls, but managed to hit more home runs. A very, very sort of strange set of statistical anomalies all coming together at the same time. I do feel like Perella, the one thing about teams like this is I think Perella has a few different ways that he can stick within the lineup. And he was relatively productive last year. And I certainly understand that rebuilding teams have to take chances on guys like this, guys who never really got the extended look that maybe their minor league numbers say on other teams they would have gotten, you know, more than a long cup of coffee to try and prove themselves. The other question would be, is every once in a while we just run into a late bloomer like this, you know, someone else who has also played some second base. Whit Merrifield certainly comes to mind as somebody who was really doubted despite having pretty decent numbers in a short stint a couple years ago, and he proved himself last year. So in deeper leagues like iDraft, like the NFBC League, etc., he's somebody for depth that I'm not going to be afraid to roster. Just the idea that he could have more of a role in the middle of a lineup than he would be able to have basically on any other major league team has a certain level of appeal to it. To further talk about how barren I feel the roster in general is, when I looked over the starting pitchers, the one that really jumped off the page to me was Denilson Lamet, who's only 25 years old. His 10.94 Ks per nine certainly mirrors a minor league track record of really being able to get people to swing and miss. You know, he also has some red flags. You know, the 4.25 walks per nine is certainly a bit high, but if you're going to allow base runners, it really helps if you can strike people out to get out of jams. But there's some real interesting questions looking at Lamet's profile overall. Justin, I asked you, do you think that Danielson Lamet has top 30 starting pitcher upside? And do you think he's actually a bargain so far from what you've seen?
I think that's a really loaded question, because does Lamet have top 30 upside? Yeah, of course he does, because pitching is so volatile and there's so many injuries that happen year to year, especially in a year like last year, that you could see him sneak into a top, 30 spot. Now, if we're talking about, at least from my opinion, like if I was going to, if everybody was going to stay healthy this year, do I think there's a shot Danielson Lamet makes it in to the top 30? No, I don't. I don't think he has a complete enough arsenal. I think he badly needs a third pitch. I think he makes a lot of mistakes. You look at the home run rate, it's astronomical. And you just can't do that, especially when you have a walk rate that's pretty high as well. He's going to be on a really bad team, so the amount of games he can win is limited. I understand why people like him. I mean, he's got two really nice pitches, but that's it. And there's been plenty of starting pitchers that haven't made it in Major League Baseball with only two really nice pitches. I think this guy just needs to be in the bullpen long term, and I will not be rostering him this year.
Okay, to return to my soapbox, if you will, the person we're speaking of is sort of clearly their ace at this level. And I want to mention, first of all, I'll play devil's advocate for a second. I happened to roster Danielson Lamet for his first two starts of June, which resulted in 14 earned runs and 8 innings pitched, including a home start against the Royals. There is no
San Diego doesn't stop home runs like it used to. It's no longer like the Giant Stadium.
Well, you're trying to lead me right into my next point, which I appreciate. But I just want to say that, generally speaking, a home start against the Royals last year should not warrant 7 earned runs allowed, as a by and large. Obviously, I think the Royals will be much worse this year than they were last year, but that was still pretty ugly. The first start was in Arizona that he gave up the 7 earned runs. But he followed those two starts with 13 of his next 15 starts being 3 earned runs or less. He certainly was not a pitch deep into games kind of guy. He had a lot of 5 2/3 and 6 inning starts, which is another thing I would question if you can even classify under any circumstances a guy to be an ace of a staff, if you are wondering how often, if at all, you're going to be able to allow him to pitch into the 7th or the 8th inning. I mean, we do have a changing landscape in baseball, and that's not as imperative for pitchers as it used to be. But when I look at a staff full of question marks, and the ace is someone who rarely, if ever, pitches deep into games, that really concerns me as to how great of an organization Preller is building. Now, he does have a reclamation project in Tyson Ross, who showed some real promise a few years ago. He also had a season where I dropped him a few months into the season because he had a 1.7 whip, which is, worse than you want the guy's ERA to be, ideally. So that's pretty horrific. So I don't know that after a long break from injury that I feel like he's somebody to hang your hat on either. I mean, my point is, it's really nice to have a good minor league system. But if you're expecting your minor league system to fill your entire team, I think that there's still something wrong with your process that's going on.
See, that's where I disagree. I don't necessarily know if there's something wrong with the process, but you have to have patience. I mean, this is a team that, in 2 years from now is going to get a huge influx of talent from the minor leagues. And then they'll still have money to go out and spend on major free agents. I mean, isn't this what you're complaining about with teams like the Yankees? Or the opposite is what you complain about with teams like the Yankees, that they don't rebuild properly, that they don't build from the inside. They go out and buy everything. This is a team that's building from the inside. It's gonna take a while. You know, they've already got some interesting pieces in, you know, trading for Myers. Margot is an interesting piece. Renfro is an interesting piece. Austin Hedges is a really nice, you know, real life catcher, and maybe not super nice necessarily in fantasy terms, but I think they're doing it right. I think, you know, I think they tried to rush a win early, and when that didn't work, they went, okay, let's get smart about this. Let's figure out a way, because this could be the Houston Astros in a couple years.
Well, I would love to believe you, and you are pointing to a good point that I do appreciate teams trying to build from within and build smartly. I guess my point is that I would like to see them ramping up a little bit towards when I'm hearing that this influx of talent is going to come, because I'm still pretty skeptical when I look at Hunter Renfro's swing and miss. I think Austin Hedges' offensive development, which isn't unusual for catchers getting to the bigs, has been not great. I think Margot is a work in progress, maybe showed a little better signs than a lot. I think Will Myers, who's someone that we will touch on later if we have time, is someone who's struggled with consistency. I would like to see a little better formative pieces sort of ramping their way up, so that when the Cal Quantrills reach the bigs, that they're not like throwing Jose Berríos in a dumpster fire of a starting rotation, etc. I commend the efforts that they changed ways. I really do, but I'm a little bit skeptical about the actual talent that they've started to accumulate that could help supplement the incoming talent from the minors. And you said they have money to spend. Well, that now seems like it's not traditionally an approach that they go to. And if you don't ramp up, the one thing the Astros did is they had such a ramp up in talent that it was easy for them to acquire free agents. I question if you can say to, you know, any major leaguers, you know, come play with Cal Quantrill. You and Cal Quantrill can carry our team. I remember Paul Quantrill. I'm that old. the rubber-armed reliever/starter at times for the Red Sox. You know, and I'm excited about seeing his kid pitch in the majors. I'm excited about a lot of Fernando Tatis. I'm excited about, but I would be more excited to see them join a little bit stronger base at the major league level, which may very well that this offseason, as you complained about today, is dragging on, and maybe the Padres are going to make a couple moves. But another thing, this leads into the next question, which is, you know, how do you feel about the newbies that were added to the roster this offseason? Do you feel like this is going to stem the tide of what I'm talking about? Do you feel like a combination of Chase Headley and Freddie Galvis, you know, Brian Mitchell, do you feel like these guys are they're actually probably significant upgrades over the people they're replacing? But is this something that's actually going to help amp up the amount of production they can have at the major league level?
I don't have a problem with the Galvis trade, though. Actually, no. I mean, I don't know why they make moves like this. And I mean, they're not interesting players now for fantasy. One, because, you know, the stadiums that at least the two hitters are moving to, you know, even though it plays much more neutrally than it used to, it's still way bigger than where Galvis was playing in Philadelphia and where Chase Headley was playing in New York. So it definitely hurts them to be moving to the National League West, to be moving to San Diego. And they weren't super interesting fantasy players to begin with. You know, I mean, Galvis has had, you know, a little bit of value the last 2 years. I think his value gets hurt, especially because they have a top prospect that's going to be coming up at some point. And I assume that Urias will be moving him out or playing second or something like that. So the Headley trade really bothers me because, you know, Roster Resource now has him starting over Corey Spangenberg, who's a guy I really like. I don't necessarily know if I agree with that. But you know, it doesn't make sense to trade for these stop gaps. I'm sure there's contractual issues and reasons why they made the moves they did. You know, I just can't remember them off the top of my head. But at the end of the day, I don't like any of these guys for fantasy.
Well, oddly enough, I don't think Freddy Galvis would be an upgrade to almost any major league roster overall.
Because of the
strength of shortstop. Mm-hmm. But it is when Eric Ibar was your shortstop last year.
Sure. But I mean, we're going to talk about, you know, we're going to kind of skim the surface of some of the prospects that may be coming up this year. They're kind of putting in the way of their top prospect, or at least the top guy who's close. So I just don't get why. I mean, yes, he's cheap. You know, they're only going to be paying him around like $4 or $5 million this year. I believe he is still under in arbitration for a couple more years. So maybe, you know, maybe that helps. But at the end of the day, like, you know, you built this farm system so that way when these guys were ready, you would start to make the semblance of a really interesting team. Why go out and get pieces that aren't really part of the future to block these pieces? Like, I don't get the Hosmer, you know, rumors and signings, because they've got a guy at first who's almost ready that could be Eric Hosmer 2.0. So why are you going to drop $140 million on Eric Hosmer?
You know, it's interesting because so many teams are rebuilding now, and it's a very difficult process to maneuver through as far as accumulating major league talent, but not doing it in a way that gets in the way of your minor leaguers, which is what you're speaking to, but also, you know, creating a buzz and being able to start to turn the corner to win, because you want to start drawing in more fans and more excitement locally and sort of build this Houston Astros model, which my Brewers, I think, are doing a little bit better at rebuilding than most teams are, but, you know, only time will tell. But the point being is that this Houston Astros model requires certain things. And one of the things I've always noted about the Astros rebuild and the Cubs rebuild, which the Cubs rebuild had a huge influx of money in it, is that the Cubs found Jake Arrieta basically off the scrap heap. Okay? The Astros found Dallas Keuchel and found Colin McHugh for nothing. And they won, we're talking about Cy Young award-winning pitchers. And so for this to work, to me, the cynic in me, which no one's more cynical than me, and Justin knows this, the cynic in me says that you have to, you're not going to go out, if you're San Diego, and get two or three $200 million pitchers off free agency, and the Cubs and the Astros got $25 million style performances for a season from Arrieta and from Keuchel, and they were basically for nothing. So I think that's, you know, and last year the Brewers at a much lesser level of success, obviously. But last year, look at what they got out of Chase Anderson. Look at what they got out of Jimmy Nelson, who unfortunately got hurt running the bases. But the point being is that the question becomes, what for it really to matter if you're going to – the attrition rate on prospects, you're going to lose two or three of the prospects just through attrition. Mm-hmm. And so if you bring up three or four guys, you got to have enough – to supplement them. And some of that is just blind luck. I don't doubt that. And maybe Denilson Lamet finds a third pitch or finds some control. And maybe he is that guy. But when you look at the rest of the pitchers, the Luis Perdomos, the, you know, the Tyson Rosses, the, you know, the Clayton Richards, it's pretty hard to fathom those guys becoming valuable pieces, let alone being valuable pieces two or three years from now when the Padres need them.
I'm going to disagree on Perdomo. I like Perdomo, and I know, like, he's kind of a Statcast kind of darling kind of guy. And the numbers weren't great last year, but I'm not saying that this is a guy that is going to turn into like a Dallas Keuchel type, pitcher, but I think he's a guy that he's super young. He's still only 24 years old, even though he's had two full major league seasons. He pitches in a decent park. He's got great spin, amazing spin on his pitches. And that's something that has, you know, been shown to maybe lead to strikeouts. So I think he did a really good job last year of holding back home runs. He got unlucky in BABIP. His xFIP was, you know, markedly lower than his ERA. I think this is a guy that is still learning how to pitch and will take a step forward year after year. They may not be huge step forwards, but even if they're little ones, he could be a usable pitcher in mixed leagues going forward if you can kind of supplement the strikeouts.
Well, I am being the prototypical impatient fantasy baseball player because 2 years ago, I saw him pitch a couple times and I thought there was something there. And then last year, I think I saw him pitch at the wrong times because I didn't like the results and I didn't really like the arsenal as much as I thought I was going to. So I may be a little skeptical there. He may be a usable piece going forward, but do you consider his upside to be
a decent
number four? Is that...
Yeah, like, I mean, he could be a number four, number five in fantasy, and I think, like, he's, like, to me, like, the perfect guy for those NFBC draft and hold leagues you get, because there's going to be no draft cost attached to him. But when your team is getting crushed by injuries and you just need starts to keep you in pitching categories, he's one of those guys that is going, you know, especially with home starts, is going to feel a lot better. Or you're going to feel grateful that you drafted him on your roster in those deeper formats, you know? 12-team league? No. 15-team league? You know, maybe he's a streamer. Definitely an NL-only guy. But, like, in those super deep leagues that you and I both love, you know, he's one of those guys that ends up being more useful than you thought he would be.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see the possibility of that happening. I want to mention one other thing that you've touched on a couple times, and this is going to be great podcasting because you'll get a wonderful chance to scoff at me and my general persnicketiness. You weren't expecting to hear persnickety today, were you?
I was not.
All right. When you've mentioned park effects a couple times, I am the park effects Scrooge. Okay. My point being is that when you add the roster that the Padres have into the staff that the Padres have, I try to really figure out what to make of park effect data. Meaning, I strongly believe that the lineup that they're pretending to run out right now as we speak, that has Jose Perella as its cleanup hitter, would make your local Little League field look like it was very pitcher friendly. Okay. Then on top of it, then you get the opposite and you add in a pitching staff that you probably could nullify home runs for the opposing team about the same if you let them throw BP. So these two things to me, you know, counteract each other in this case, but you know, the home team to me is always the most important thing in park effects, you know, and to me, the two things neutralize each other and you say, well, you know, the Padres aren't going to hit very many home runs, but they're going to give up a boatload of home runs. And so like the two things becomes neutral. If the team was good, as in if the team was loaded with power hitters, which they do kind of have hitters that sell out for power. So, you know, maybe this analogy doesn't work perfectly, but the point being is that if the team was loaded, then since they play the most games there of anyone, you know, we always think about who's going to San Diego to hit, but the players on San Diego are who hit there the most, and they're the ones that are going to affect the park effect data the most. So now you can come back at my cynicalism. Cynicalism, I said, which is not a word, by the way.
I mean, yeah, this seems like a rabbit hole maybe that I shouldn't go down, but I see what you're getting at. And I, you know, I don't know exactly 100% how park effects are calculated, so I don't want to necessarily speak out of turn, but I'm pretty sure that the majority of places that do park effect data take the level of talent that plays on the field into account. I would assume they would. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, 100% say that's true, but I would assume that that would be the case.
Well, instead of going off on this pedantic rant that I went on, why don't we go back to something that would be a lot more fantasy useful for people? And let's talk about Brad Hand, who I didn't realize exactly how good he was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then last year, he just flew right off the charts and was amazing. Stepped into the closer role at the end of the season for the Padres, which at times is kind of like being the Maytag repairman traditionally. But the point being is now we have to wonder, he's under contract for 2 years, this year and next year, he's under control. So the question now becomes, how do you rank in this environment, how do you rank Brad Hand as a closer when you think there's a, you can, I mean, I should ask you what you think the percentage chance is, but when I think there's a, about a 65% chance that he's traded to another team at the trade deadline to be a setup guy.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. So add into that the fact that the Padres are not going to be a very good team this year. So they will likely not win a ton of games for him to close out. The skills are great, and I think you don't have to pay very much for him, so I think he will end up on a number of my teams, but not because I'm searching for saves, because I think he is going to be an asset in strikeouts, in ratios, even if he gets moved out of San Diego. Like, Steamer projects him for 29 saves. I would take the under by a long shot on that. Like, I wouldn't project him into more than 20 saves. To be quite honest, you know, and I think if you're rostering Brad Hand because you're looking for saves, your process is wrong, and you're going to end up having to roster Phil Maton too, because I think he would be the next man up if he does get traded.
Well, I do think it's a really interesting discussion because the Major League Baseball atmosphere has really brought this in. It used to be that it was very rare for a closer to be traded to be – it was more rare. I shouldn't say it didn't happen, but it was more rare for a closer to be traded somewhere else to be a setup guy. But now when the Yankees are, you know, stockpiling closer types like Cordwood, when, you know – teams are expecting the Dodgers did it last year to a certain extent, when teams are expecting to go four deep in elite setup guys because the starters go so much shorter, that increases the odds so much that Brad Hand is going to get traded somewhere not to close. But the tantalizing part of it is that his skill set is so wonderful, and there's still the outside chance that injuries hit a different team, or he just happens to be lineup trade-wise with someone who uses him as the closer once he gets traded. Then all of a sudden you hit a gold mine of value. Because I think, unless I'm mistaken, I think you would take the over on Brad Hand if you thought he was getting traded to a contender to close,
sure,
you know, come the trade deadline. And that's part of the – that's both part of the fun and part of the reason that you might want to rip your hair out, mm-hmm, when trying to construct a bullpen, let alone an overall pitching staff going forward. Let's play a semi-ridiculous game because I'm sort of known for that. I'm going to give you two players and tell me who you would rather roster going into the season.
Okay.
In a vacuum. Okay? Let's start with one that's going to seem utterly redonkulous. Okay? How about – the ultra-talented Brad Hand or the eternally flawed Fernando Rodney?
I mean, I'd rather have Brad Hand.
I think I would rather have Rodney, which is ludicrous on the surface. I'm just saying that I actually think – I think the Twins are going to be significantly better than the Padres.
Yeah, and, but here's the thing, like, say, like, and that's the thing, like, people look at closers and saves as the end-all be-all when it comes to rostering. Like, the amount of damage that Fernando Rodney can do to your ratios is it isn't worth rostering a guy like that. I'd rather spend less money because I think you'll probably have to spend less money on Brad Hand and get better ratios and better better strikeout numbers over the course of a season, you know, and I'll figure out the saves in some other way.
Yeah, and that's certainly a slant that I see. I also recall, by the way, Fernando Rodney has the best season in the history of relief pitchers under his belt as well.
let me throw a similar question back to you. If you knew that Brad Hand would be staying in San Diego all year, who do you think finishes with more saves?
I still believe that Rodney will finish with more saves.
See, you have a lot more faith in Fernando Rodney than I do, and that's the ultimate question. I don't think Rodney's closing by the end of the year.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, he doesn't have a lot in that bullpen that should fear.
He doesn't
people,
have a lot
se.
In that arm. I mean, let's be honest. It's Fernando Rodney, and like, don't get me wrong, love the dude. Really fun guy to watch pitch. But, like, at the end of the day, like, he is super old, and how many more times are we going to really say that this can happen?
There's definitely the possibility of a cliff, and maybe I'm putting too much stock in Rodney, and he is his own bizarre case study in and of itself. So maybe he's not the world's best example. Let's go to a different kind of example then. Let's talk about a middle of the road closer option. How about Mark Melancon? Is that a loaded enough question for you?
I'll take Melancon because I believe as long as he's healthy, he'll be fine. And like, you know, and so far he seems to be healthy coming back into the season. I think I will have some shares of Melancon this year. I will have a couple of shares of Brad Hand. But those guys aren't necessarily at the top of my closer wish lists, let's just say.
Well, let's do one more then, who's kind of an interesting person to compare people with. Let's talk about Cody Allen. Would you rather have Cody Allen than Brad Hand?
Yes, I'd rather have Cody Allen.
Well, I do think the team is more stable, but they have a tendency to use their bullpen sort of bizarrely. And it's sort of... like I said, it sort of makes for an interesting case study. I think I will take Cody Allen as well, with some reservations, because I do think Brad Hand is the better pitcher, which is actually quite a bit of quite a compliment to Hand.
I disagree that he's the better pitcher, and I mean, you know, as much as we've had this, like, you know, constant argument, you know, within the industry, like, well, is this the year Cody Allen loses, you know, the role, or, you know, gives up part of the role to Andrew Miller? I mean, look at his last three seasons. They're almost identical to each other. You know, sub three ERAs, you know, 11.5 to 12.5 K per nine. You know, he limits home runs, limits walks. I think Cody Allen is about as safe as you come when it comes to closers, and he doesn't get that kind of credit.
Yeah, well, I think we've shed light on the fact that Brad Hand is going to be a very interesting and volatile commodity this mm-hmm. year. You never know. Really bad teams, the Roberto Hernandez year from years ago, really bad teams sometimes accumulate a ton of saves. And save opportunity prediction is amongst the most difficult things that you can possibly try and forecast. Sure. So, you know, he is definitely going to be a commodity in this market, and it's just going to be very difficult. The array of outcomes seems to me like it's very wide for Brad Hand, who is probably their best major league piece. It, you know, within relief pitchers, he's as good a relief pitcher as they have for any player at any position, in my opinion. So real quickly then, Justin, why don't we talk about what draft commodity you like better? You like Will Myers as a draft commodity about where he's going, or do you like Manuel Margot better?
I mean, where they're going, I think you know what? No, I like Will Myers. Like, I don't think Will Myers gets enough respect for the kind of seasons he's put up, you know, especially the last 2 years. I understand, like, everybody wants to get the young star, like, before they really break out, and that's why Margot's price keeps getting driven up. But in the mock drafts that I'm in, I'm seeing Margot going, like, in the top 100, and that, to me, seems still a little bit crazy, you know, especially for a guy who really needs to work on his plate discipline. You know, yes, he's got really, really great speed, but if you can't get on base, you're not going to use it as well. I mean, he had an OBP of 313 last year. That's not going to do it if you want the guy to be stealing 30-plus bags. Whereas Will Myers has hit at least 28 home runs and stolen at least 20 bases in each of the last 2 years. We know the averages aren't going to be there necessarily, but that's okay. He does walk a fair amount, so at least in on-base percentage leagues, he gets a little bit of boost up. You get power, you get speed from first base. If Hosmer signs, he goes and gets outfield eligibility once again. I like Will Myers a lot, and I don't think anybody gives him any respect.
Yeah, I think the depth at first base is part of it, but like you say, I mean, you could strike gold real easy if he moves back to the outfield, because then most leagues, even three outfielder leagues, he's more than usable, you know, a more than usable player in three outfielder leagues. But in five outfielder leagues, he's a really important player if he has outfield eligibility. And that sort of goes into one of my things this year, in that I do really like first base and outfield eligible players. For that exact reason, because first base has a lot of sleeper potential with the breakouts that we had last year. And outfield, to me, is pretty volatile when you get there. And this also points to what we've talked about, because I think part of the reason that Margot is going so early is because outfield is not as deep as it has been in the past. There's more volatility in the mid-range outfielders than there's been in quite a few years. And so Margot, a guy who's going to – there's only so many stolen base guys to go around, and he's also seems to have a pretty unlimited leash. So it's very likely that as long as he can stay healthy, he's going to be given a chance to accumulate steals, which puts in a floor for a player in this day and age. If you're going to get 20-plus steals, the player is going to be more than usable.
Sure.
Just because of the modern landscape and how few people run. I do really like the way that our discussion went, as far as a round table sort of discussion, going around a number of different issues and drawing them back to the Padres and the situation that they're in long-term here and the situation that they're in short-term. Justin, to say I appreciate the time and the help putting together the Padres podcast is an understatement. I really appreciate it. I, by the way, am Chuck Anderson, and I can be reached at Just Chucking It. I recently finished an NFBC preview, an NFBC draft help article that that I know we will be using here soon. And I'm better off throwing it over to Justin and asking him what he's doing, because that could take quite a while. He's a busy man.
Yeah, that NFBC draft article is going to be going in our draft guide. So look forward to that. It's going to be a big draft guide. If you guys like, I know a lot of people go out and still get magazines. This thing is going to be like 100 to 200 pages of a lot of really good information from all of our writers. We've added a ton of writers to Friends of Fantasy Benefits. So definitely check that out. Should be coming out in early February. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Follow my work at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, obviously. Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and Fantrax. So, yeah, thanks.
Justin, thanks again for your time. I really enjoy the team preview month. I do think it gives people an excellent re-entry into draft mode, and that's exactly where I'm at as well. I'm trying to hold off against the urge to start an NFBC league quite yet, because I'd like to get a little more information on where some players are going to go first. So I'm right along the process with our listeners of both listening to the other podcasts and preparing for the ones that I have the pleasure of doing with the FWFB staff. Thanks so much, everyone. This was the San Diego Padres preview, signing off.
find.